Welcome back, everyone, to Millwood and Micah, a Star Wars story. My name is Amanda Millwood, and I'm a screenwriter, actor, director, and a huge fan of Star Wars.
And my name is Todd Micah. I'm the author of the Grimguard book series, and we have never watched all the Star Wars movies in order with anyone. Until now. If you've been following along with our podcast, then you know that Amanda and I have been watching all of the Star Wars movies, and today we've arrived at the movie that started it all, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Or, if it's my brother and your dad in the room, it's just Star Wars.
The story of Star Wars.
Yes, this is a movie that started it all, released on May 25th, 1977. Star Wars, as it was originally titled in theaters, just Star Wars. And correct me if I'm wrong, Amanda, but the original theatrical release of Star Wars in 77 did not contain an episode number. It just, the opening crawl just said A New Hope, and it did not say Episode 4. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was something like when it was a smash success and they decided they were going to make a sequel, they re-released it in theaters in 78 or something, and it had, mm-hmm. It was a modified version of the crawl that had the episode number 4 on it.
I'm going to be honest, I don't know, actually. Like, I'm sure that that's the case, because I don't see why they would have put a number before, like, especially if they thought that this was going to be a total flop, like, just going to set yourself up for failure if you think that. But yeah, I have no idea, honestly, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, that, like, they re-released it with A New Hope and, you know, the number attached to it.
There's actually a really good book I read a long time ago, so I know way entirely too much about the behind-the-scenes production of Star Wars, the original trilogy, Empire Building, The Remarkable Real-Life Story of Star Wars, and it's written by Gary Jenkins. I strongly recommend it for anybody who is interested in the actual making of Star Wars, from where George Lucas came from as a filmmaker, you know, what the film had to go through from inception to final release, and everything poor George Lucas went through and put everyone else through. And yeah, it's great. It tells way more factoids than we can ever possibly get into in 100 podcasts. So
what was the name of the book?
It's called Empire Building.
Oh, why would you not call it Building an Empire? Like, that's a much better title. Oh, that makes me mad.
But it's an extremely good book, Empire Building by Gary Jenkins. It actually is a really, really good read. Like, it has lots of anecdotes from the cast and crew and the producers and all kinds of stuff.
Nice. You want to know how I know a bunch of random Star Wars fun facts?
How? If you say your dad.
Well, yes, that, my dad, because he knows. He's like you. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of the original trilogy. He's such a nerd. But it's actually, you'll never guess. It's mm-hmm. not that I've read a bunch of books or watched a bunch of documentaries about the original trilogy, because honestly, I haven't. It's because I love listening to Star Wars fun fact ASMR. There's so many.
Wait, hold on. This is a search category I didn't know existed.
Oh yeah, no, there's tons of videos out on YouTube of, like, I just love listening to ASMR in general, but especially if it's about topics I love. So Star Wars is one of the ones that always pops up, and there's so many, for some reason, fun fact Star Wars ASMR videos where they just kind of ramble and just spout fun facts for an hour in quiet whispering, and I love it. So I know a bunch of random ones because of that.
I feel like I've learned something about you.
Yes.
Amanda wants to be lulled to sleep every night by a nerdy man leaned over the other side of the pillow and just like, hey, did you know that? And just like shares gently monologues about his favorite fandoms.
Yes, exactly.
This is how she's put up with me for all the years that we've been friends. She's like, yeah, it's just nice having a nerdy guy willing to talk for a few hours at a time.
Exactly.
Speaking
that,
of
that kind of brings us,
to speaking to about a nerdy guy, possibly one of the nerdiest guys, getting a chance to talk at us for hours at a time. This movie is written by George Lucas, and directed by George Lucas. And the IMDb rating for Star Wars Episode IV: A New Hope is a very, very respectable 8.6 out of 10. I'm not gonna lie, I had this distinct feeling when I looked up the IMDb rating. Internally, I went, if it was about 15 years ago, I feel like this would have been rated higher. Not like I think a bunch of people have come in and rated it lower, but I feel like by our standards of what we expect from movie making and storytelling, A New Hope in a Bottle is not impressive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And like, right, we're going to get deeper into that as we talk about this. Obviously, it's the oldest Star Wars film. But before we start getting too deep, why don't you take us away with those fun facts, Amanda?
All right. For our first fun fact, the movie was originally titled The Adventures of Luke Starkiller. You have to say it with the the radio voice from Legend of Korra.
In our last exciting installment, Luke Starkiller ran away with the plans to the Death Sphere.
That's me.
It's actually really funny because Starkiller, you know, that name got recycled then into the concept for Starkiller Base. And before that, it was used as the code name in the Star Wars video game, The Force Unleashed, as the name Starkiller was the code name given to Darth Vader's secret apprentice, who you play in those games.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought that was his actual name, is it not? I've never played the game, obviously. I don't game, guys, but like, I thought that was his actual name.
No, he has an actual name, but Vader like either murdered his family or like they were killed in an Imperial raid and Vader found this like orphan who basically Vader's very impressed with his latent force ability and takes him under his wing. And no, I'm pretty sure Starkiller is like his code name.
Oh, okay.
It's gotcha. It's your superhero name.
Gotcha.
Oh, we're using our made-up names now.
Seriously. But yeah, no, I love that, honestly, like, because it is so Flash Gordon, and obviously that's a huge inspiration for, you know, for the whole of Star Wars, at least the original trilogy.
Right.
So I do like that very campy, you know, title. Obviously, Star Wars is more concise and iconic, but I think that would have been fun. For our second fun fact, oh, this one's a long one, bear with me, guys. The giant fiberglass skeleton of the Kraut Dragon in the desert was too much trouble to disassemble and pack up, so the crew left it in the Tunisian sand dunes. It was later discovered, quote-unquote, by others, most notably paleontologist Michael Ryan and author David Wes Reynolds, who unearthed some of the last pieces in 1995. I did know that. I knew that that was a thing, but they just decide, we'll just leave it.
Imagine, like, because imagine carrying these big, heavy fiberglass pieces and, like, assembling them into a skeleton and, like, covering up with sand and everything. And then you're all packed up and ready for leaving Tunisia. And you just look at these, like, hundreds of pounds of fake bones and you're like, it can stay.
I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
It blends in.
And our third and final fun fact, I did not know this one and I thought it was hilarious. George Lucas was so sure that this movie would flop that instead of attending the premiere, he went on vacation to Hawaii with his good friend Steven Spielberg. He was on that vacation when he came up with the idea for Raiders of the Lost Ark in 1981. Wow. That is I mean, I guess that's a win because you came up with Raiders of the Lost Ark, but you didn't go to your own premiere, like, bruh.
I think after everything he went through, which again was quite an ordeal for poor young George, when he got done with the movie, I think it was the equivalent of like listening to a recording of your own voice for 2 hours. He's like, I don't want to do it.
I can't show my face.
Oh yeah. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but like literally everybody involved with it, from the producers to most of the actors, pretty much held that same opinion. They're like, what is this? This is stupid. Like, I mean, I think the only people that really truly believed in it was like George Lucas's wife at the time, who helped edit the film. She basically did all the editing for the film, and we'll get into that more. And like Mark Hamill, like Mark Hamill thought it was great.
Sweet little sunshine.
I know. He was the one who was the most positive during the entire film, and he was very excited about the entire thing. He was really into it.
Well, yeah, because this is his first major role. Like, I think actually not even major, but like just first role period that I can remember. And like he was complete unknown at the time, so this he probably felt like this was his big break, and boy was he right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Well, I'm not going to make a statement, so I guess help me with this. Was Mark Hamill was also in a movie around the same time as Star Wars called Corvette? Was it right before or right after Star Wars?
Oh, I have no idea. Like, I'm not nearly as well versed in Mark Hamill's filmography. I know him as Luke Skywalker and the Joker, and that's about it.
Okay.
Oh, so, and Fire Lord Ozai, duh.
To say, for shame. I'm correcting myself. The movie is called Corvette Summer, and it was actually in 1978, right after Star Wars. So you're right. He really didn't do anything, if anything at all, nothing major before that. So,
okay, there you go.
All right. Well, speaking of the movie and all that stuff happening back in the 70s, as I mentioned, this is the oldest Star Wars movie. And, you know, it dawned on me as I was watching this and preparing for the podcast that I thought to myself, I don't think that you and I have ever talked about this movie at all. we've acknowledged it, that it exists, and we've referred to it, but like we've delved fairly deep into things and parts from other Star Wars movies. Not this one.
No, because there's just really not a lot to talk about. Like, it's Star Wars, the original Star Wars. Like, it is one of the most culturally impactful movies of all time. But since it is, as you put, a cinematic relic, it's like, yeah, there are things that, you know, the movie did, you know, Star Wars did, that Empire and Return of the Jedi did better. So it's like, right. You know, well, you can't really.
Yeah, it's a funny conundrum discussing this movie, because even as somebody, you know, I was born much closer to the original trilogy than you were. They were still relatively recent movies. You know, I was born in 85. Let's say, for sake of argument, it's 1989 and I'm watching this. This movie is 11 years old. For us, that's the equivalent of watching the original Avengers. Like, it's not an old movie by any means. Whereas for you, in your childhood, these movies were already, you know, at least 20 years old.
Right.
And so a little difference, because you were, you know, young when the prequels came out. I was a teenager. But even then, all that said, I kind of have a similar view. It really is worth the discussion of the original Star Wars breaking new ground, stretched its budget at the time to the limit. No one knew what to expect. The whole thing really is like an experimental film, and I want to kind of make a statement about that to lead us off. But I pose to you the question. As you said, The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, they knew what Star Wars was when they were made. The original movie set the tone for everything. What the world building was like, what the storytelling was like, the kinds of characters and themes and music and everything that we were used to. 20 years later, because Star Wars didn't just influence and inform future Star Wars films, if it impacted and influenced all other movies going forward. And so where does Star Wars rest with us now in film history? There's so many more Star Wars movies that have been made since then. Like you said, even as sequels, did Star Wars better, did what it did better. So what is A New Hope? Is it still, when we turned it on in 2024, is it a fun adventure film? Is it the equivalent of George Lucas in the 70s thinking back on the old, you know, Flash Gordon? Is it a nostalgic fun adventure movie? Is it a hallowed piece of the modern myth, where themes of Arthurian and timeless legend and, you know, the human struggle and the hero with a thousand faces is immortalized for us in the 20th century? Or is it a dated sci-fi movie from the 1970s with the worst special effects and the slowest lightsaber battles of all of its entire saga. And debate. What do you think?
I mean, in my mind, it's both. Like, honestly, and I'm not saying this as, like, because I don't hate this movie, despite what it may sound like. You know, I think that for what they did with what they had, I think it's great. But I watched this movie, I think I was probably 5 or 6 when my dad first introduced me to the original trilogy. And even then, as a kid, I would watch, because I think the first time we watched them, we watched all 3 of the movies, right?
Right.
It was like a binge watching, basically, at the time. And so, you know, my dad had these laser discs.
Back in the 90s, we used to call this marathons.
Yes, so we marathoned all 3 movies on Laserdisc, the like original cut of the Laserdisc, because again, my dad was a huge nerd. And so, you know, as I'm sitting there watching, I remember thinking that this is kind of boring, even as a 5-year-old, which like is supposed to be, you know, 5, 6, that's the, I feel like the perfect age to start someone watching Star Wars. You know, especially the original trilogy, because they're so lighthearted and fun and all that, especially the first one. So it's like, if I felt that then as a kid, and I still feel that kind of now as an adult, and that's just my hot take out of the way right there. That's my general grievance, is that I feel like this movie is pretty boring. Like, there's not a lot of exciting stuff happening. And when it does, it happens very quickly. Like, I was shocked by how fast the ending happened. Like, I forgot how short the actual battle of the Death Star and destruction of the Death Star was. Like, it's like 3 minutes. And I was like, what? They already blew it up. Like, it just, I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be like the big moment, the big heroic hurrah for the heroes and Luke and everything. And it happened so quickly. And I was like, wait, what? I could barely like have time to process it before we moved on to the next thing.
And see, this is where I feel like a lot of modern films have kind of spoiled us. And I don't even necessarily mean like, oh, now they're these giant, you know, visual overload. I do think that, but that's not what I'm referring to. Like, we can watch movies that are just absolute carnivals for the eyes. Like, you get a movie like Avatar or Speed Racer or these dazzling visuals and things layered so densely the eye can't even catch all of it. You know, you're thinking spectacles like the finale of Avengers Endgame. Like, you know, the 1970s filmmaker mind cannot comprehend. No. And like, I think we are a little bit spoiled on it, in my opinion, just to interject that, because we're watching this movie while we're also watching Pixar films that are just dazzling, beautiful spectacles of special effects. And then we're turning on and we're watching a bunch of people in 70s haircuts walking around talking about things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not to say, like, I feel like I have to keep defending myself on this, because I do have...
You're seeing the torches and pitchforks coming for you. It's anything that sounds like criticism.
Grab your pitchforks. but can't have an angry mob without pitchforks.
But I know what you're saying, because this is a hallowed piece of cinematic history, but it's also the very core of the fandom that we're talking about that's so near and dear to us. We want to be able to recognize some things about it that leave it a little bit behind the other films that came afterward objectively, without it seeming like we're criticizing it, like objectively saying something about it's bad, because we're not.
Right. And I think that because of the cultural impact that this movie has had, again, as you said, it's treated as this hallowed piece of film that cannot be touched. It is looked at by fans that grew up with it, that were there when the movie actually came out, as like, you know, through rose-tinted glasses, basically. And I feel like it is not... Like, I don't want to say it's not worthy of that, because again, I think it is a huge, momentous movie just in the cinematic, the universe.
Like, can I offer the thought on it that it is both capable of being the most impressive movie to to possibly like one of the, if not the most impressive movie to impact human history and culture overall, and yet not be a perfect film.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would say it's probably one of the most, if not the most influential movies of all time.
Right.
Like I would, that's why I wouldn't use the word impressive. I'd say influential. Because I think even back in the day, again, you saw how everybody, you know, George Lucas, the creator included, thought that this was garbage. So it's like, even then they were like, this isn't that good, guys. Like, what are we doing? And it just happened to strike a chord with people back then because of the landscape of the cinema at the time, the 70s being so dark and, you know, brooding and just violent. And then suddenly this space Western comes out and, oh, the good guys actually win. And it's mostly happy and upbeat. And like,
yeah,
you know, sure, there's some dark stuff in it. Like, you know, sure, Luke's and Uncle get burned alive, but that's fine because he's going to go off on an adventure.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, fun. I mean, okay. You know, you can't make it out without burning a few relatives. But so,
but
and I agree with you entirely that, you know, and you have a much better word for it. That's the most influential. But it is okay for us to be able to admit that, you know, there are flaws to it. One of the things that makes it difficult, I think, to compare it to the other Star Wars movies is that part of its slow, ponderous, I think is a good word for it, style of storytelling, comes from the fact that George Lucas was, you know, a young film student, a great, you know, film school graduate, and his sort of specialty, I guess you could say, was documentaries. And so Star Wars, one of the things people praise it for, or by comparison could criticize it for, is that it is in many ways shot like a documentary. There, you know, the shots are tight and intimate in some places, more so than you'd see in other movies of its quote-unquote genre, where lots of action movies keep things really pulled back really far. They have lots of sweeping views. It just wasn't possible. Again, Star Wars plays out more like it's an experimental film, the kind of thing that now you would go when you go to a film festival and, you know, see some documentary or some foreign film made out over there. And well, that's one thing that I appreciate about it, but it's because I like those kinds of movies. You know, I watch a lot of independent films. I watch a lot of movies made by A24. And when they're not pumping out a super disturbing horror movie, is a lot of their movies, you know, are very varied, and some of them are ponderous independent films like this, that the kind of things you'd only see at a film festival. So I like it. And so the style that makes it kind of slow, I still enjoy it, but it is very different from basically all the other Star Wars movies that came after.
Yeah. And I think that a big part of that, at least for me, is, and this is something that I kind of noticed for the first time, because again, this is not one that I watch all the time for Star Wars, just because again, it's not my favorite. But I noticed this time around watching it, the pacing and editing of the movie. And we were kind of touched on this a little bit in the fun facts, but George Lucas's wife is like kind of famous within the Star Wars fandom as the woman that saves Star Wars, quote unquote. She has denied this, but I think that's just her being nice, not like, you know, dragging her husband's work. But I think it's totally true. But also, God, do I wish I could have seen the original cut, because the cut that we get is fine. It's definitely workable. It's doable for a movie. But especially in the first half of the movie, I'd say the first hour, because I think the movie is exactly 2 hours. Like, I don't know why I like to look at the time to, like, you know, see, oh, here's the end of Act One. And so, like, the movie's exactly 2 hours. And I'd say about the first hour of the movie is really shoddily cut together, not gonna lie. And it's very noticeable to me as someone that edits myself. Like, you can tell that she was cobbling together anything she could find that was workable.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, literally. And she would save a shot up until the part, the very frame where it became unusable, and then she would cut it only right there. And honorable mention, we don't just want to refer to it as George Lucas's wife, or more appropriately, his ex-wife. Her name is Marcia Lucas, and the two of them divorced after Return of the Jedi.
Oh, proof.
But, she was done.
Yes, so Miss Marcia. Miss Marcia. Yes, I feel like she probably did save Star Wars, because again, if George Lucas felt so badly about the initial cut that she had to come in and basically edit around it and save it. Yeah, I would love to see what the original cut was and how bad it was. But
it's probably the reason the one that George Lucas was seeing in his dreams, waking up in the middle of the night like Anakin seeing his wife dying in childbirth.
Yes.
It just, and
my
it's
film's
just,
dying.
George Lucas is there being like, I this isn't the film it should be. I want more. And then,
but I know I should.
And then she's there being like, your film won't die at the box office, I promise you. George yep. Lucas with his tickets to Hawaii. No, I promise you.
But then it actually ended up, you know, not dying. It was great. Yeah, so the pacing, again, is part of the thing of the movie that I feel like it doesn't make it bad per se, but it does make it feel a lot different than the other two movies in the original trilogy. Cause I feel like the other two are pretty well paced. Like from what I remember, it's been a minute since I've watched them, but you know, I remember that scenes would start and end exactly where they should have in the original trilogy in the next two movies. But in this movie, scenes either linger or they're cut incredibly short, sometimes way too short. And there's never, and again, I think it is just because the initial cut was so cobbled together that like she was just doing the best she could with what she had. But it is noticeable. And I think that they definitely fixed that going forward, thankfully.
You know what's odd? It's odd. I think the exact same thing about two other Star Wars movies that are very Lucas heavy in their influence. And tell me if you disagree. Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith. They also have scenes that, like, sometimes I'm like, why is there such a long, awkward, like, lead into the scene where no dialogue is happening yet? So, two scenes that immediately stand out is the scene in Attack of the Clones where it's Anakin and Padme in front of the fireplace, and we open with like four long painful seconds of silence before either one of them says anything.
Oh my god, yes, I always hated that awkward, like they're just kind of sitting there like, line, what are we doing, what scene is this?
And the other one, and I know is a fact, that there was a whole basically half of the scene, the first half of the scene they cut out in Revenge of the Sith, in the scene where Palpatine asks Anakin to be his personal representative on the Jedi Council, they're like slowly walking along the room together. And I'm like, somebody say something.
Do something. Use my knowledge, I beg you. Yes.
Yes. But like, it's a little bit of Lucas editing-itis. Like, the scenes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Start, and they need to be a little tighter to the where the action of the dialogue begins, or they trail off.
Mm-hmm. Yes. For writers, screenwriters, and editors, anybody that might be one of those listening, the number one rule when writing scenes, aside from show, don't tell, is start as late as possible and end as early as possible for the scene. So you don't need to fill your scenes with a bunch of dialogue to lead up to the point of the scene. Like, just get to the point. Like, you know, unless it is something that requires a buildup, like a big reveal or something. Like, obviously you don't want to do that. But most of the scenes that we're talking about in the scenes or in Star Wars, they're not that. They're just dialogue scenes, and there's no big reveal or lead up. It's like, you know, so start as late as possible, end as early as possible scenes. That will make for a tight viewing experience and reading experience if it's a script. And yeah, I feel like this movie does not do that. It lingers or it cuts way too quickly.
You know, it might even be, and this is me branching a little bit into like the events of the movie and less the production, but also kind of sticking with the writing. Another reason why I think A New Hope compared to the other Star Wars movies may feel, you know, slower, or in your words, a little more boring, is really when you consider all the movies surrounding it, both the movies that come afterward and the movies that canonically come before, like what we've been watching, the drama level is very low in Star Wars. I even talked about it in the last movie. We were talking about Rogue One, how Rogue One adds so much more gravity. It adds so much more Wookiee oomph to the events in Star Wars, whereas Star Wars is a fairly light jaunt and it's pretty adventurous and funny and bantery. And even when the stakes are high, it's not played for like white knuckling drama. It's, you know, whereas all the other Star Wars movies have some pretty gut-wrenching moments. And sure, like they blow up a whole planet. But as I said, okay, they blew up a planet full of people we don't know. Ooh, horrible. Like, it's more impressive that they depicted a planet being blown up on a movie screen. They figured out how to do that and make it look, you know. But like I said, it's just, there's no heavy drama. There really isn't any. No characters are crying their eyes out. Like, there's no massive character conflicts. And like the most tense things ever really truly get is like Han and Leia arguing with each other in the hallway, or Vader choking his employee in a business meeting.
Yes.
Things stay pretty light. So the movie doesn't have a lot of high drama, emotional content to like drive it as being like a really high stakes movie compared to pretty much any other Star Wars movie. Except debatably The Phantom Menace. The Phantom Menace similarly is kind of the same way, and I feel like that's a very like George Lucas stamp on his work there.
Don't want people to get too emotionally invested.
Right. The first entry in his trilogies are fairly light and they're fun and like not to be taken too overly seriously. And kind of like it's not that deep, you know what I mean?
Right, bruh. Not that deep.
On that note, I really am interested, though, about your hot take, because you thought at first that the thing about it being a boring movie by comparison.
I guess that is a hot take in general, but like,
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's that hot of a take. And before I get into your hot take, I just want to toss this in. You know, I think it's a misnomer to say that the modern moviegoer, or as we like to say, because you're what, 27 now?
26.
26. As we say, you know, kids these days, that they wouldn't find it interesting. I still am taken back to a film school, like I wasn't in a film school, but like a study of film class that I took in my community college. There's a bunch of film students there, you know, they're like first, second year film students. I wasn't at a film school. These were people who would eventually go on to bigger film and art schools. And for one day, you know, our teacher, who was a huge Star Wars fan, came here and was like, I couldn't do this class any justice if I didn't let you guys watch. And pretty much what he said, he was like, I think it's like one of the greatest movies of all time. No one can debate it is one of the most influential movies of all time. And that is Star Wars. And there were tons of people around me. These like, you know, 18, 19 year old kids in 2004 who had never seen Star Wars movies outside of like, they saw, some of them saw The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. And they were like, oh, I've never seen this before. I've never seen this. You know, oh, my parents talk about this movie, or, you know, things like that. And it was amazing afterward how many of them came away from, the majority of them came away from it. Even people who were just taking the class as an elective and weren't particularly invested in being film students or filmmakers. And they were like, that was surprisingly good. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. Or they were just plainly like, I could see for the 1970s, like, those effects and like the whole world building, this like sci-fi fantasy world, like even by today's standards, this is a good movie. And he's like, again, 1977, this must have blown people's minds. Like it is still something that, you know, while like any movie, it either floats your boat or it doesn't. I still think that it, no matter what way you shake it, like even the kids these days would watch Star Wars and be impressed that this was made at the time
It doesn't really have anything to do with my hot take, but.
Oh, no, that was just one more jump I wanted to make in on the like whole production cultural relevance before we get into like more about the movie itself.
Gotcha. Well, so my hot take is that I've never quite gotten the hype around R2-D2 and C-3PO. And that's not to say that I don't like them. I do like them. But some people say that they're like their favorite characters in Star Wars, and that I don't get. Like, I think that they work well as the comedic relief side characters, but in this movie, they're practically main characters. The first 20 minutes, we don't meet Luke for 20 minutes into this 2-hour movie. That's a pretty sizable chunk of time to be spending with these two rust buckets of characters. Like, and so it kind of feels like, you know, they're setting, or at least George Lucas was setting them up to be the main characters of this movie. And then he kind of forgets about them in the second half, which is hilarious. Like, they're just kind of there because they have to be, because they were in the first half for so much. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I don't know. It just, they never quite clicked with me the way that they do with other people. Like, you can call me a Disney shill if you want. I'm sure my dad has many times, but my favorite droids in all of Star Wars, and I didn't even get to mention this when we did Rogue One, but K2SO and BB-8 to me are like perfect droids. Like, I cannot fathom beating them in like terms of design or personality or anything, you know, usefulness to the plot. You know, obviously these two were kind of the prototypes for those two. So, like, to me, K2SO and BBA are just better versions of C-3PO and R2-D2.
I think it's less that C-3PO all by himself is an amazing character and R2-D2 all by himself is an amazing character. I would compare it to comedy duos of the old days, you know, Abbott and Costello or the Three Stooges or, you know, anybody that like is a comedy team. That I think that that's what R2 and 3PO are, is that the way they play off each other and the chemistry that they have between them, which you don't get to see that real often. The two movies that actually have the most of it is this movie, Attack, and also Attack of the Clones, because which I mentioned during Attack of the Clones, that it has so many original trilogy throwbacks that if you were looking for was nostalgia and the prequels, Attack of the Clones should be your favorite movie, because the C-3PO and R2 banter's in it.
Right, exactly. And yeah, it's so funny though, because as I was listening to Anthony Daniels play C-3PO, like, he sounded different to me. I guess I'm just more used to hearing older Anthony Daniels and like more of the more recent Star Wars stuff. But like listening back to him in, you know, the original movie, I was like, wow, he sounds so young and different.
what also is different too, and my brother mentions this a lot with C-3PO, is that as time has gone by, Anthony Daniels kind of has created this persona voice for C-3PO that's like a little more exaggeratedly like flamboyant and high pitched and like a little bit like, you know, just it exactly what I said. Whereas if you listen to him in this movie, and especially in The Empire Strikes Back as well, his voice just sounds like Anthony Daniels speaking. He's not being particularly like high pitched and obnoxious and like hoity toity sounding. He just sounds like a British guy in a robot outfit. Like,
I know more than an interpreter, sir, and not very good at telling stories. Yeah.
He's much more mild mannered and less like extreme. He's kind of like a stereotype of himself in like modern media.
Right. And in a way, I kind of actually prefer, like, if I were to rank the 3PO performances, like, it probably this one is the best just because it hasn't become a cartoon copy or, you know, cartoonified version.
Yes.
Flanderization. There we go. I was trying to think of the word where, you know, you cartoonify a character, basically, you exaggerate them. And in this, I like that he is much more reserved and mild mannered. He just feels more like a English butler as opposed to like a funny cartoon character that
he's not flighty and panicky and like screaming at stuff, but at the same time he is a little over dramatic. Like when he falls off the ridge, he topples backward and breaks his arm off, and he's like, oh, go on without me, there's no point, I'm done for. He's over dramatic.
Yes, he is very over dramatic. And you know, I love that they kind of have a sort of married couple vibe between him and R2-D2, and the like, we can't obviously understand what R2-D2 is saying, but we can infer just based off of the reactions that C-3PO gives, and it's pretty funny. Which I guess that could be another fun fact, is that apparently, according to, you know, my fun fact searching, that R2-D2 was supposed to have spoken in English, like, you know, robotic English, just like C-3PO. And apparently he has a very foul mouth, which I guess we could have inferred just based off C-3PO's reactions to him. But they decided that it would be funnier to use robotic words and sound effects as opposed to actual English, because, again, they could get away with saying naughty words without actually saying naughty words. Instead of Jody Wood. And I think that was a good idea.
Yes, C-3PO, I got to tell you, I actually kind of was thinking to myself as I was choosing favorite characters on this, and maybe this will be kind of our wrap-up point for this half of our reviews, to kind of end on this, as we're talking in particular about characters, is, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2, I actually considered, when I thought of my favorite character in the movie, I just basically on what you're saying, that, like, the droids have a very big part in this movie. We pretty much come into the movie, they are the vehicle that transfers the story, because like you said, they're the constants, especially C-3PO, is the constant that carries over from the prequel trilogy story canonically into the original trilogy. Somebody watching them all in order, they are the constant. And so us making a big giant time jump by seeing them again, you know, carries us through with a note of familiarity. They are our anchor characters for much of the movie, which is a remarkable feat in storytelling when you think about it, because we've effectively made C-3PO, anyway, our anchor character. Mm-hmm. He is kind of like a protocol droid, a go-between, as we stay with him, unaware of what's going on. We stay with him as he's watching R2 get the secret mission, but he's not privy to the conversation that Princess Leia has with him. We watch the first 20 minutes of the movie basically from C-3PO's perception. And so he is the one who then sort of translates us in our point of view gradually over to the human characters. He interprets the story into a connection. As he befriends Luke, we befriend Luke. As he gains access to information, then we become privy to it as well. C-3PO is also the most competent in this movie. I mean, he tricks the stormtroopers. He either accidentally or intentionally makes a lot of things happen. Mm-hmm. He's great. This is definitely, and I say this in agreement with you, this is definitely like best 3PO in this movie. And he was almost even my favorite character for the film.
Oh, interesting.
But, and this one might surprise you, my actual favorite character in A New Hope is Princess Leia.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. She's great.
She is great. But like many people might think when, you know, you're talking to a guy who likes Star Wars, is like, oh, I love Darth Vader, because, you know, I'm a big Vader stan. Like, I love Vader. He's 1,000% sneak peek. He's my favorite character for The Empire Strikes Back, hands down. So you'll hear all my Vader standing then. Or like, I'd be like, oh, I love Luke Skywalker. Or like, oh, cool, tough guy Han Solo. Like, no. I love Princess Leia. Every time that she's in... And I think that in many ways, I actually like her in A New Hope best of any of her roles. Yes, she has like the whole love story in The Empire Strikes Back and everything, but I love A New Hope Leia. She is snarky and she doesn't like anybody of our main heroes yet. She's mean to them. She tells Han to shut up and start taking her orders. She says that Luke is short for a stormtrooper. She even calls dear old Chewie a walking carpet. She insults the Millennium Falcon. She says that Tarkin smells bad and that Vader is a dog he's keeping on a leash. In the same breath, I love Princess Leia. I love that she just does not take anything from anybody. And I think Carrie Fisher's performance in, admittedly, compared to The Empire Strikes Back, a relatively small part of the script, I want to say part of the movie, but a relatively small portion of the script, I really think her performance is pretty electrifying.
Oh yeah,
it's really good. She puts it all into it.
I agree. Like, and I was honestly debating about my favorite character in this movie. And it was really between Princess Leia and Han. I think I gave it to, spoilers. My favorite character is Han. and I think I gave the edge to Han just because he is a much bigger part of the script. Like you said, he had more time to really just be on screen and have and do things. Whereas Princess Leia, yeah, she's great. I love how fiery she is. Her personality is just so electric. And she, I just love that she's kind of a bitch. Like, I right, love exactly. the characters, not gonna lie. Like, you know. But it's so funny because watching this now with the landscape that is, or I should say the hellscape that is the Star Wars fandom nowadays, and their reaction to female characters, yet they praise Princess Leia for being, you know, this just, oh, revolutionary female character, which I think she is, because especially for yes. the time. But my point is that if this movie came out completely the same as it did back in the day, if it came out today, people would hate Princess Leia. Hate Absolutely. Her. And I say that with my full chest, like,
yep.
because she is everything that people criticize about female characters nowadays. She is bitchy. She is very outspoken. She takes control from the men. She kind of, in a way, basically devalues all the men around her because yeah. she's more competent than them, even though she also happens to play the damsel in distress in the movie.
Considering she literally owes them her life for saving her.
Yes, and she literally, you know, she talks down to the men, she insults them, she literally takes the gun out of, I can't remember if it's Han or Luke's hand, Luke but somebody, Luke. Yeah, Luke's hand, and, you know, saves their asses. All of this, if she had done that nowadays, people would hate her, say she's a Mary Sue, or that she is way too flawed of a character, unlikable, like, you know, all the arguments that people throw at, especially at Star Wars females nowadays, but pretty much any female yep. character nowadays. Yeah. And again, I love characters like that. I love characters that are not afraid to be super flawed, especially if they're female characters. You know, like, you know, Korra, she's one of my favorite characters of all time. And she's very similar to Leia, at least in the first couple seasons. You know, very brash, hard-headed, kind of a bitch. I love it. So, you know, I love Leia, but like I said, I had to give the edge to Han just because he has more screen time and screen presence on the movie. And, you know, how could you not love Han Solo? I've always been more of a Han Solo girl than a, you know, a Luke girl. I love mm-hmm. Luke, even though he is the whiniest bitch. People say Anakin is whiny. Have you seen A New Hope, Luke? I am begging you to go back and rewatch this movie because holy shit, every line out of his mouth is just a bitchy whine. It drives me crazy. Like, I love it because I think it's hilarious how whiny he is, but like also at the same time, I'm like, God, you are so annoying, Luke. Like, oh.
It really is that tell that we watch and we're like, oh gosh, this is Anakin and Padme's yes, kid. Oh seriously. Man.
Like,
man,
from the get-go, the very first thing he does is a whine, and he does not stop the entire movie. Some of my personal favorites, though, are, I was going to go into Tachi Station to get some power converters, or it just isn't fair.
Like, it just isn't fair.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I do love that they chat. I do love, though, that in that very scene, in that exact same spot, Anakin Skywalker some 23 years earlier was like, Obi-Wan's holding me back, it's not fair, and he throws the thing into the back. And as I said at the time, I love, by the way, once again, how when he throws it, it doesn't make this like dramatic crash. It sounds like he took like an empty beer can and threw it across the room, just ding.
Yep, and he's just flying his little toys, Peter. Like, oh, I'm gonna mope and be a little baby teenager, man.
I think the funniest part about that is that Luke is flying a little model of the, and I love the name of it, Skyhopper. Mm-hmm. He's flying this little Skyhopper model, and he has a real version of it sitting like 30 feet away in the garage right behind C-3PO. It's like having a car, and you love your car so much that you buy a Hot Wheels of your car in the exact same model and color.
Yep. And just while we're on the topic of Luke real quick, I actually am really sad that the deleted scenes of him with his friends in Mos Eisley, I think it was, are not in the movie.
Anchorhead. They were Anchorhead.
Oh, Anchorhead. Okay, sorry, my bad. I really wanted to see Biggs and there was a girl. Okay. Oh, wait. I can't remember.
You know what? I'm wrong. I think I'm wrong. I might be wrong. It might not be Anchorhead. It might be the aforementioned Toshi Station, because there's Biggs, and then there's Fixer, his other friend who's a mechanic, and his girlfriend Cammy.
Yes, that was it. I really love those deleted scenes, and I think they really do a lot to add to Luke's character, actually. I know that timing-wise, that probably wouldn't have been the best for the movie, but honestly, the movie's already really badly paced, so, like, who cares? but, like, no, for real, because I think that, you know, showing him with his friends, and then having those friends leave to join the, you know, the Resistance, the Empire, what, not the Resistance, that's later, the Rebellion, you know, I think that really helps to inform Luke's character and why he wants to go. Because we don't really get the sense of, like, yeah, he whines about it to his aunt and uncle, like, oh, but that's what you said last year. All my friends are gone. Ugh. It's like, okay, yeah, that's
tough. He sounds like any rebellious teenager who just wants to get out of the house and away from work. It's a whole
nother year. Yeah.
It's a whole nother year.
Yeah, that's what you said last season. Ugh. I'm going to my room.
I'm sorry. Like, part of my brain is thinking ahead to, like, Owen and Beru when, like, the stormtroopers show up at the homestead and he's trying to explain. They're like, so your son's missing? He's like, he's not our son. Beru, did you file a missing person report? He's like, I didn't know what else to do. And he's like, yeah, I think he's our nephew. He's been staying with us for like 20 years, you know. You know, like, did you guys have official custody of him? He's like, well, some old guy left him off in the desert. And they're like, describe it. Like, he has any problems? Like, no, he's just always whining about stuff. You know, my friends are leaving. Ugh, I don't want to work on the farm. Ugh, I think those droids are stolen. And the troopers are like, little turn and slowly look at each other on that last one.
Sorry, what was that last part?
and Owen just, like, Hagrid is like, I shouldn't have said that.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, Luke, you sweet little precious thing, you. I mean, it's very accurate for a teenager to act that way, but it's just hilarious that people say Anakin is whiny when Luke is right there.
I love also how you got two breaths into Han Solo's my favorite character and not Luke, because it's just 10 minutes of monologuing about Luke.
I know. Okay, so let me get back to why Han is my favorite.
Okay.
Off my Luke tangent. Yeah, no, I mean, again, there's not much to why Han is my favorite. He is so cool. Obviously, it's Harrison Ford, so he's gorgeous to look at. He's got the swagger of an older actor who actually knows what he's doing, as opposed to, like, the younger Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill, who are just kind of feeling their performance out. Like, they're not quite sure what to do because they're brand new to this world. But yeah, no, Alec Guinness and Harrison Ford, I think, since they're the older of the actors, they really bring a sense of gravitas and, like, weight to their roles. Like, they feel very lived in, despite this being the first time they've ever done these characters. And I really like that. I appreciate that a lot. And, you know, obviously Han, he's got the best one-line quips, and, you know, he's good with a blaster, and he just looks so cool doing it all. Like, I love his outfit, and I know that you're going to say that.
Oh, yeah, because the last thing I wanted to throw in on Han, was there more you wanted to say about him? Just seeing this man's praises?
Like, because I said, there's not much to him. He's just the coolest guy.
I mean, and he is, because, like, the guy experiences, like, that much character development in the movie as he, like, realizes that he does have friends and he doesn't have to be a loner. But, like, and it happens in, like, a turn of a, like, a flip of a coin at the, like, right, last 5 minutes of the movie. He decides this and comes back. But he has the best outfit. I mean, the boots, the pants with the Carillion blood stripe on the side, that goes from the hip down to the ankle. The off-white, mostly V-neck, unbuttoned chest, you know, chest hair bearing, shirt with the vest and the gun belt. No, the man's got it all. He's so cool. He is the definition of cool for, like, all of the 70s and early 80s. It's just Han.
Yep.
You may be cool, but are you Han Solo cool? He's the Fonz of Star Wars.
He is. Harrison Ford kind of It was his world back then, and we were just living in it.
Except we weren't, because neither one of us was born.
Exactly.
Well, with that, we'll break things off here with much more discussion about Star Wars A New Hope in our next podcast episode. So join us then. We still have a lot more to go over the most influential movie of all time.
See you then.
That's all for today. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode, so feel free to leave a review or comment, follow the podcast, give us a good rating, and all that good stuff.
You can find us on Instagram at Millwood and Micah Podcast, and don't forget that our sweet podcast merch is available on TeePublic. Thanks again, and we'll be back in the next episode.